joining us on the Skype line, as advertised, as promised, Mr. Matt Ravens from Ravens Ballroom. How are you?
Doing fine, Nightmare. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Now, do you go by Matthew or Matt? Because I kind of shortened it just out of habit, but I don't have to.
Whichever you please, sir.
Okay. Well, sir, that's like putting an elevator in an outhouse, man. That don't count. I tell you what, we've been enjoying your album now for, do you call this one an album or is this an EP? Seven song album, seven songs EP. I don't know what the terms are.
I guess technically it's an EP because it's about 30 minutes of music and the seventh track is really an edited version of a full length version. So it's an EP, but we're going to start recording our first LP this winter that'll be released in May.
Oh, fantastic. Now, you're going to keep us in the loop on that, right?
Of course.
Oh, that'll be awesome. All right. Well, first and foremost, how long have you and Simi and your third partner there, John, how long have you guys been a band?
We've been a band as Ravens Ballroom since 2011, but the three of us worked together in a previous project that included two other people, but... the band really just kind of naturally evolved into being just the three of us. And Gesimi plays guitar too, and she moved to bass, and I just really liked the sound of us being a three-piece. So we made that transition, and we founded Ravens Ballroom, and it was a really good move for us because the chemistry that we have live and in the studio, we're really a good tight-knit unit, and we're all good friends too, which makes it even better.
Oh, that's cool. Now, Simi is your wife. We were talking about this off air, and I wasn't sure how that dynamic, if it was a sister or a cousin, but she's your wife. You guys got married, I'm guessing close to 7 years ago?
About 8 years ago, yeah.
About 8 years ago. And she does she collaborate with you on the writing process as well, or...?
Oh, absolutely. And Simi is also a great writer herself. She has really good instincts. And, you know, the foundation of our relationship started with music. I mean, we were friends when we first met and, you know, we started to play together and our relationship grew out of that. But, you know, we're really good at wearing our different hats. When we're working on music and we're writing and we're rehearsing, it's business, and you know we really take our art seriously. And what we always say is that, you know, we don't care where the idea comes from; we just want the best result.
Right.
So she sometimes helps change what I do, and I sometimes change what she does. And you know the writing process is really organic that way. And we have John to just you know hold the anchor down, but. We're really good at maintaining our boundaries when we're in the band because you know that John's involved as well and you know how it is.
You don't want to cut anybody else out of the loop or nothing. Now do you taunt John with all the drummer jokes since you both play guitar and bass?
No, because I play the drums too, so, you know, I understand his plight and, but, you know, John.
It's funny because I used to have a running joke with a friend of mine's band had a running joke. They wanted to call the name of the band four musicians and a drummer, and the drummer didn't think that was very funny.
John's a very harmonic drummer though, man. It's funny. But he's very harmonic. Like he understands music really well. And that's a really big plus. I think of all the drummers I've worked with throughout my musical life, I have the best musical relationship with him because he really understands not only tempo and feel, but he really understands music too.
Can he read music?
None of us can actually.
Really?
And I actually, yeah, I'm a self-taught musician, and the music that you hear is just what's bouncing around inside my head.
Wow! Now that is totally awesome. See, because I can't. I tried to learn how to read music when I was a kid because my mother plays piano, but I'm completely and utterly horrific. I can't carry a tune with both hands in a bucket, and football ruined my little finger on my left hand, so guitar's out. And so is piano for that matter. But when I was a kid, I played bass. They tried to teach me how to read music. And to me, it just looked like flies on a paper. And I never could figure it out. But I think that's great that none of you three, it's like the original blues guys that just did it all by numbers and made up their own, you know, way of playing.
Well, I don't know. To me, because I'm also a painter and, you know, I have a really extensive background in the visual arts too, music has, it has color and it has form and line and all of the elements that, that the visual arts have. And, you know, when I string together chord progressions and melodies, it's almost like they have visual representations in my mind. Like with Space Time Wave, that, that rhythm that the song has really is intended to feel like the rocking of a boat on a sea. And I, because I really understand music visually, I'll put together music lines and melodies that, that really complement what concepts will sound like also.
Wasn't there a one of the master composers that, that said basically the same thing you just did, that he could, you know, hear colors? And that's what, that was what he based his music on? Or am I just imagining things?
It's possible, because, you know, it's strange, because when we're working together, if I'm writing a song, I'll be looking for melodies and I'll find myself thinking, like, that's too red, or that, you know, it, or the angles are too sharp. I want something more round, especially with drums. I hear that pretty, pretty consistently, where drum lines and dynamic movements in the rhythm section are really formal things to me as a songwriter. And so, like, I'll almost see representations of what's happening in my head, and then all of a sudden, when it falls into place, the picture kind of comes into focus. It's hard to articulate, but it is something that I go through in the writing process. Plus, it's like a physical sensation. I just can feel when I, like, that's where it's supposed to be.
Wow, that is the first time I've ever had a musician put into words what I feel when I'm in an old school photography darkroom.
Nice.
Because that's exactly the way I did my when I was a photojournalist, and I that's what I did. I would walk into the darkroom and I just would be able to dial in everything from colors to sharpness to contrast to whatever it is, and I just knew by looking at it, there you go. Put the big piece of paper in, because I don't need to test anything. That's it. And hit the button and it was done.
Yeah. And it really is like that. And you know, and I think the time I get to have the most fun with that is in the studio with the writing process, because there are a number of guitar lines and vocal melodies that are in the studio versions that weren't in the live versions prior to recording them. And as we were writing the songs, like there are certain guitar riffs in L'Anima that never existed before the recording sessions. So I like to take liberty with things like that, because I'm a big Zeppelin fan, and I love Jimmy Page's model, where, you know, like the studio version becomes like a painting. Like it becomes iconic, I guess, in a way, because live versions, you know, you have all of this volume and all this decibel level that fills a space, but a studio version is really heard on small speakers sometimes, or in headphones, so it has to have all this extra stuff to compensate for that. So when we approach our studio versions, we really approach them as separate things, and that's where we really get to play around with the colors and with the subtleties.
Wow, that's awesome. It's almost like you have skipped the Esteban Learn Guitar by Color instruction and just said, no, I got this. I'm going to paint a masterpiece with what I got.
Well, it's not that easy, man. I mean, I also produced the album, and I'm more critical of myself, I think, than other people are of me, and I think that's how I remain balanced. That, you know, it's not about me; it's about the song, and you know, I'll re-record certain guitar lines as many times as I have to, just to get it how I hear it in my head. And, you know, us being able to produce, like me having the studio at home, and since I produced Rain Dance and I engineered it too, I really wanted to have that artistic freedom where I didn't have to worry about us paying for studio time. You know, we were able to just really spend our time organically on the record. And that really gave us the opportunity to push the record as far as we did.
Now, let me change directions real quick, because I want to go back in time just a little bit and get some history, but I want to come back to this because I got I want to know more about the recording aspects and how you did that. But I also want to, because we kind of, my stupid transitions in my head, I'm having an argument with Time Warner Cable on Twitter and how they don't understand my problem that on demand never works in my neighborhood by anybody. And they come out to test it in, you know, before 5. I'm like, well, you jackasses, ain't nobody home watching on demand before 5. Of course it all works when you're here. So my transition sucked. I don't want to put you into the middle of a giant argument that's been going on for 2 weeks and 3 different visits and 45 phone calls. But anyways, when you were growing up, were you musical? Or is this something you found out later in life?
Oh, no. I picked up the guitar when I was about 7.
Wow.
My dad played a bit, and it was around, so I just picked it up and started fiddling around with it. And I would just listen to music, and I had the ability to reproduce what I heard. So
you're one of those people that I want to light on fire. That I've always wanted to have that. That would be like my superhero skill. I wish I could play by ear.
Well, you know, like I have a friend that once said to me, I was jamming out a bunch of songs, and he said, you know, you spent a lot of time alone as a kid, didn't you? I said, you know, as a matter of fact, you're right, because I would just sit down and study songs, and I would play along with them, just, you know, and come up with my own parts to, you know, to classic rock tunes, and that was really how I learned how to play, and then that kind of was a natural progression to start to write.
Now, did you grow up listening to the rock and roll, or what we used to call the heavy metal, and now we just call classic rock?
I'd have to say that like my favorite bands are arguably The Doors, Led Zeppelin, and Jane's Addiction.
Nice trio. I like three. All three of them. My wife hates The Doors, and I don't know why, but I don't think she understands the poetry of it all.
I heard The Doors for the first time when I was about 11, and I remember hearing the end and saying to myself, what is that guy talking about? And there was just this aesthetic in the music that really sucked me in. And, you know, I've always been attracted to lyricists like Morrison, like Perry Farrell, you know, the lyricists who really understood that what's the word? That melancholy. I just use the Italian word. The melancholy behind things sometimes. And you know, when I would connect with artists who were able to express that in a way that I really appreciated, it was kind of something that was it was inspiring to me, because I really felt like, all right, I'm not alone. I'm not the only cat that sees this stuff.
No, I can totally understand that. And even somebody who's coming from a non-player side of the coin, you know, I don't play an instrument, I don't sing, I couldn't carry a tune with both hands in a bucket. But the form and function of what we grew up on, I can remember, I was, this is how old I am, I'm really going to date myself here. I can remember hearing the new album from The Doors come out on the radio. You know, it's like, new album's out, that's awesome. Now, granted, I couldn't appreciate it until later on in life when I got into The Doors and Zeppelin 77, 78. But I remember as a kid hearing all the Doors songs being played on, you know, the radio out in the middle of nowhere. I can remember 1976 when I first heard the band Kiss's. They had which one was it that I heard?
I think wasn't that when Alive or Destroyer came out?
Destroyer. It was Rock and Roll All Night. Destroyer came out, and I heard the local radio DJ go, hey, let's listen out to this new band called Kiss. Because you got to remember, 76, there wasn't a lot of, I guess this would have been earlier than that. This would have been the first Kiss album. Because it would have been 73 when I was living in the, actually so far in the middle of the country. It's a ghost town now. It's listed in Kansas's ghost town registry. That's how far out in the middle of nowhere I was. But I can remember the DJ saying, this new band Kiss and their song, and I don't remember what the song was, but I'm like, Kiss? That's a silly name for a band, because I'm like 6. You know, I'm 6 years old. I'm like, oh, dude, this band called Kiss is out there. But the same, you know, but then as I got older, because then after I heard Kiss and that song, it got put into the back pocket, because I lived in the country and I listened to nothing but, you know, George Jones. The old man was a serious cowboy, and so all we listened to was country music. And then we moved to the city, and I'm like, hey, look at this. There's something out here besides George Jones and Buck Owens and the Buccaneers and all the rest of the crazy stuff that we used to listen to. Now, does your wife or John have the same similar background in their growing up, or did they pick it up on late in life, or were they also musicians from like the age of 7?
Simi started playing as a teenager, and she actually started on bass and then moved to guitar and back to bass. But Simi's another one who, she has an impeccable sense of rhythm and feel, and that was what drew me to her as a musician initially when we first met, that she had this ability to she really understands time, and that's something I really look for in musicians. And she just started to play by ear the same way that I did. She just has a real natural sensibility, and you know, she comes up with really good stuff. I mean, she doesn't write as much as I do, but the stuff that she does write is really something. And John just knew he wanted to play the drums from when he was a kid. He said, I started banging on stuff when I was a child, and then just kind of never stopped.
Oh, that's totally cool. Hey, do you got a favorite song off of the EP?
Do I have a favorite?
Well, it's actually a two-part question. Do you have a favorite, and do you have a couple of minutes to stick around?
I have a favorite depending on what that favorite is based on. And yes, I absolutely have a couple of minutes to stick around. I like them all for different reasons, I would say. If I'm allowed to on the break, if we're going to take a break, let me think about that.
Well, I was going to play the song that you chose while we're on break.
Where this is segueing.
Yes.
Let's see. I think I'd have to go with I think Paper Doll Lou, because Paper Doll Lou represents so much about the dynamics of the band. There's so much of everything that we do in that song.
Now, did you primarily write the lyrics for all these songs, or was it complete collaboration with you and Simi?
On this album, I wrote all the lyrics.
Okay. So,
yeah, on this album, I wrote all the lyrics.
Put us into your head while before we listen to it, what were you thinking about with Paper Doll Lou?
Paper Doll Lou is a commentary on... it's a commentary about a social dynamic of people who have to live one life and then have a secret life behind that. Lou is kind of a tragic figure. He's a guy who's in a marriage with a person who belittles him, and he's reduced to this paper doll that's on the wall, and he has this secret fantasy life that he gets to indulge in his imagination. But you know, the lyrics that say, you know, Paper Doll Lou in his bright leather shoes with his pot roast wife who's just serving the news, and Paper Doll Lou just hangs on the wall and he don't say a word and he knows he's a bore. So he's really a tragedy in that respect.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful lyrics, man. Tell you what, thanks. Stick on the line. We're going to continue with the conversation here in just a few minutes. Raven's Ballroom, Paper Doll Lou, don't go anywhere.
Opposition strike. Doggy decision with a color collision ride. Lunch in a river with something that slithers up and down his thigh. Blackout and candy, he's a ton, he's a dandy, and a flashlight. Paper doll, Lou, and his bright leather shoes, and a plow.
Paper Doll Lou, Ravens Ballroom, Matt Raven joining us right now. Welcome back, Matt. Great song. Love the lyrics. Now, now that we've delved back into a little bit of the history, I want to talk more about your writing process and your recording process, because you just told us that you did the producing all by yourself at the house, or at your own studio, I should say. What is your writing process? Do you do the lyrics first? Do you do the melody first? Is it a complete blend? Do you just sit around and noodle till something falls out of your head? Tell me how it works.
Believe it or not, most of our songs, most of my songs, I'd say probably about 80% of them were written on an acoustic guitar. Okay. That's where my writing process generally tends to start. And the thing I like about writing on an acoustic is because an acoustic guitar is also a percussion instrument. So you really establish the dynamics and the feel of the song rhythmically and melodically on an acoustic. And that gets expanded almost like an accordion would, where, you know, you take the initial thing and you build it, you separate it and build it into all of these different pieces. I started to record on my own back in, I think, 2007 was when I really started to produce myself. And because I also play the bass and I also play the drums, I play the keys, and I play every instrument, I can have a lot of fun where I'll do sketches. Sometimes I'll do entire sketches of songs where I'll show the band, like, hey guys, this is what's in my head. And then we take that and then it grows into something else. But then there are other songs where, you know, we'll write them together. There are tracks that are going to be on the upcoming album, which were songs that were written in the studio. And sometimes, for example, if I have a music line, I'll record the music and then I'll just start doing scratch vocal tracks. And even if it's gibberish, I'll just sing something and melodies happen. That's how Space Time Wave happened. I wrote that music line, and as I was just freeform mouthing, you know, stream of consciousness poetry as I was singing, that line, Space Time Wave, just came, it just flew out of my mouth. L'Anima was written the same way. I was playing acoustic and I was in Italy at the time. On a New Year's Eve, and I was with some friends, and we were drinking absinthe, and we were jamming, and I played that music line, and la-di-da-di-da-da-di-da-da-da-da, l'anima, just flew out of my mouth, and I just built it into a song. Sometimes Simone and I will really methodically put something together. It depends, like that piano riff, that one riff in Paper Doll Lou, that was Simone's riff, and we wrote that in a studio session on a weekend. So, you know, it really depends. And something, it all depends on what I have first. I might take lyrics and turn it into a song, or I'll find a song and I'll put lyrics to it. It's very organic, and every song kind of has its own character.
Now, do you ever let John do anything important, like write or come up with a melody, or do you just tell him to sit in the back and throw pizza at him and, you know, make him look like Animal from the Muppets?
No, John's very instrumental in helping with the arrangements. When we're working out songs and we're actually doing arrangements in our compositions, John plays an active role in that. He's very good at he and I have a really good give and take with that part of the songwriting process. And he'll even make suggestions to me and say, "Hey, maybe we should pull this back and bring that up forward. Do this for a couple of extra measures." We all, like I said, we all look for the best idea, and we don't care where it comes from. You know, it matters what's right, not who's right. You know, so when we get the song finally worked out, it's a collaborative effort.
Now, I'm looking at some of the pictures on your website, which, by the way, ravensballroom.com. Get there, check it out, guys. It's got all the links to everything else that you'll possibly need. Ravensballroom.com. I see a picture of you with a bass bow. It's long enough
violin
to be
bow.
A bass violin bow. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Do you often use other instrument accoutrement for your playing?
I love the violin bow because of the really swelling, thick sounds that it makes. As a matter of fact, in L'Anima, there's a whole bow section in the middle of the song, and that whole part was written in the studio. We have another song called Fault Line, which is going to be on the next record, that has a really crazy violin bow part, and it's it's just the bow has this feeling about it that I've just never been able to achieve when picking. So it's something that I've gravitated to. You're even going to hear tracks on the next album that have mandolin instead of guitar.
Nice.
With distortion. So we're experimenting with a lot of different things, and it's like a big science experiment.
There's a regional band down here called Split Lip Rayfield, and they play kind of bluegrass on steroids.
Nice.
And they use a mandolin, a guitar, and their bass is actually the gas tank from like a 64 Impala. And it's a one string bass, and the string itself is a weed whacker line.
Wow.
And the guy chalks up his hand, and he chalks up the back of the, and he made the bass himself. And it's some of the goddamnest, awesomest music you've ever heard. And it's just three guys that are banging away on their instruments, a mandolin, guitar, and a homemade bass.
See, I love the stuff like that. Musicians that are creative that way, where they're even going as far as making their own instruments, because you really can make a musical instrument out of anything.
Oh, yeah.
You really can. And I remember in 2003, I was in Italy, and I was working with a friend of mine, and we wrote a couple songs together. And there was a car alarm that was malfunctioning off in the distance, and he bought the condenser mic outside and actually did a recording of it, and we actually used it in the song.
Beautiful. Oh, so I love that.
That's a fun process when that happens. It's a great surprise.
God, that reminds, there was an old movie with, what is his name? Christ, he's dead now. He was 80s and 90s actor, Gregory Hines, where do you remember where he electronically attached pickups to his tap shoes?
I think that was the movie Tap, wasn't it?
It was the movie Tap. Yeah, of course it was. What am I thinking about?
Yep.
Thank you for telling me that. Yeah, and he went out and got all the and imitated all the sounds in the street. And he's like, you people don't want to see me tap dance. Let's go outside. Let me show you something. And I love the organicness of him dragging in the background noises of the city into his routine. And I think that when bands do that, like, you know, your beeping noise, your alarm going off, I mean, that's, to me, that's not only incorporating your music and your ideas, but also the world around you into creating something new that nobody else has heard yet.
Absolutely. I mean, everything, all music is sound at the end of the day. You know, I always like to say that art is really never about itself. It's always a reflection of something. It's like the shadow of the world is what art is. So all of the sounds that we make into music and we make into paintings and sculptures are things that we're extrapolating from the real world. And I think that all art has that quality to it.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's the way I look at it. I try to look at a lot of that stuff. Now, currently, right now, basically, if I was to write a song using your specifics to the process, it would just be an angry red song with some cable company involved.
There's nothing wrong with that, man. I got a bunch of those too.
Now, obviously, working on the rest of the music. How many of these songs are going to be on the full LP? Are we talking all of these and nine more?
No. There's going to be nine other songs. Like, this album is its own thing, and we picked these songs very deliberately for this record. But, you know, we got a lot of music. It's a good problem to have. We have more songs than we need for another LP, because we write a lot of music. And, you know, we're in the process now of picking what songs we're going to do. But no, this album is its own thing. And the follow-up will be 9 or 10 songs that you haven't heard yet.
Now, as a graphic, a classically trained art school graduate, did you design the cover? Is this a picture that you created?
Actually, Sibby took the picture. And I did all of the layout and the graphic layout, so we were able to keep that in-house, too.
Very cool. Let's talk about in-house, because you said that you produced this, and that's something that is something very near and dear to me, because just like what we said while Paper Doll Lou was playing, the music industry seems to think that if you don't have the money to create the CD, you're not any good. And I like your take on it where you said, I could either buy the equipment and do it myself, or I can pay somebody $5,000 and do 4 songs total for that amount of money. How do you find the process?
Well, I mean, that whole record was created in a room in my house on a Macintosh computer with an interface. And I use Logic. That's the recording software that I use, but I use it very much like an old school multi-track recorder. I don't really get into the MIDI stuff, and we mic everything. We mic the drums, and we record. The way our process works is we really establish the rhythm section first, where I'll throw a couple scratch tracks down, and we work on getting a really solid drum track, and then we'll add the bass, and then the guitars get added on. So we record everything separately. I recorded every track individually. We didn't record this live. Because I don't necessarily right now like to approach studio work the way I would live, because of what I had mentioned before about, you know, not having that decibel level live when you're in the studio. You know, the music really has to really be approached from a different point of view, because of the nature of how it's listened to. I think in today's day and age, though, you know, you can get the tools together to make a record without a huge investment. The issue, though, is having the ear and the sensitivity to be able to you know, objectively understand your own music from an outsider's perspective. And that's something I really strive to do. I try to take me out of the equation. So when we're arranging the songs and mixing the songs, I divorce myself, because I think that ego really gets in the way of songwriting. You have to put the music as its own thing, because once somebody loves it, it's not yours anymore. So
right.
In that writing process, we were able to record everything separately, and I recorded guitar tracks that didn't even exist before that. And then it was a matter of everything just weaving together like a tapestry, and that was how it was mixed.
Well, I think you did a fantastic job. It really is a tight, well-organized, well-played EP, and I personally can't wait for the next one. Do we have a release date in mind, or a season, I should say?
I am May of 2014.
Okay. Spring.
That's what we're looking at.
Spring of 2014. Because I hate putting hard numbers on anything in this industry, because everything is so fluid.
Sure.
That, you know, it depending on what somebody says one day might be completely wrong the next day. And, you know, to me it's always been, well, when is this going to come out? Well, we're going to give you a spring. Well, it didn't come out in spring. Well, we'll give you summer then. You know, it's going to be done when it gets done. But, you
sure.
know, we all like to look at a bullseye and go, okay, we're getting closer. We're almost to the middle.
I think the spring is a reasonable time. I do. And now that I've got the production of this one under my belt, I'm really excited to approach the second record with all of the experience that I gained from doing the first one. Because I definitely picked up a lot of tricks and learned a lot of new techniques along the way.
Now, did you do a lot of YouTube video watching to pick up the tips and tricks, or is this something you just figured out on your own?
Yeah, believe it or not, I did. You know, research and the internet are wonderful tools.
Oh, absolutely.
And as long as you're you know, looking in the right places and you're open to learning new things, there are a lot of great people out there who have taken the time to put a lot of really good information online. And it's definitely worth studying. I learned a lot of techniques about miking drums and sound production from that, because I don't have any engineering training. I'm self-taught.
Yeah, you are quite the Renaissance man. You play music, you paint, you do all of the producing and directing of the way you want your music to be heard. I mean, this is stuff that, you know, you can go back 300-400 years and find the same passion in all the classical and great music. Even if you just go back 40 years, it's all the same.
I'm an avid Beethoven fan.
Nice. I'm not big Beethoven. On St. Bernards, but that's the movie. Again, aging myself. That joke's so old it smells like mothballs.
Well, I still remember it, man.
Oh man. All right. So on the Twitter at Ravens Ballroom, correct?
Yep, we're on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook. You can buy our music on iTunes, on Amazon, on CD Baby. We're all over the place. So yeah, just Google us and you'll find everything you need.
Now, how do you say the Italian song or the Italian name of the song? Because I would butcher it. Because to me, that the accent is more of a comma, and so I say it dumb because I'm an ignorant redneck from the middle of the country. tell me the name of that again.
It's pronounced L'anima.
L'anima.
L'anima in Italian means the soul.
Nice.
That's what it means, and that song is. Like I told you, the original riff and melody were written in Italy, and the song was about, it was inspired by an earthquake, actually. It's almost written from the planet's perspective of blowing off steam, the same way people build up this pressure and this stress that they have to relieve. And it's inspired by a very tragic earthquake that happened in Aquila, which is a city east of Rome, in central Italy. But L'anima in Italian means the soul.
Well, I like it. I know my listeners love it. And I want to say thank you, Matt, for spending some quality time this afternoon with us. The last three interviews or conversations I had with Gene's people, I always seem to forget till the very end to thank our good friend and fan of the show, Gene Foley. You can go to eugenefoley.com if you're a musician and you want to get hooked up with the right guy. He never brings me anything but the cream of the crop, and you guys are definitely at the top of the list.
I appreciate that.
So next time you talk to Gene, tell him, you enjoyed your time here, because that way he'll keep sending me groovy people like you. And if you see him actually in person, give him a big old hug for me, would you?
Absolutely, man. And I'd love to discuss the next record with you when it's done.
Oh, absolutely. No, as soon as that baby is ready for the market, you send me the digitals, and we'll get them on and put into the new music download, and we'll come back, and we'll hopefully be able to do it with the whole band.
That sounds great.
Oh, man, it's been an absolute pleasure. Keep doing what you're doing. I'll get you a copy of this conversation for your website, and, of course, Gene will be on the receiving end of it as well. And if you want to tell friends and fans and Twitter followers, you're getting ready to have a five-song Ravens Ballroom five-way five-play for you right now.
Nice.
We're gonna start off with Soul, because I would butcher that in Italian. And not the radio edit. We're going to go for the full-blown 7 minutes L'anima. Is that right?
L'anima.
L'anima.
Exactly. You did good.
All right. There we go. L'anima kicking it all off. Matt, thank you so much for spending the time with us today. And as soon as you get that new project in the can, let me know.
Thanks, Nightmares. My pleasure.